Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week, we bring you the best news, views, and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, founders, investors, journalists that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. For the regular listeners of you, you'll already know that I am a CEO and founder of a health tech business myself, which is called PocDoc. PocDoc is working with healthcare systems in the UK to find, diagnose, and prevent diseases like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and chronic kidney disease. Our Healthy Heart Check, which is a 10-minute equivalent of the NHS Health Check, is actually now available across the country from online pharmacies such as Well and Pharmacy to You. And actually, as of Monday, we will be launching in every single Well pharmacy. So if you or someone that you know would benefit from a Healthy Heart Check, go check that out. And for more information, go to pocdoc.co. That's pocdoc.co. And thank you, as ever, to PocDoc for supporting the show. Thank you. I say this every week, but thank you so much for listening. Thank you if you're listening live on the amazing Health Radio, UK Health Radio, rather. There's tons of other presenters doing all kinds of interesting shows. I recommend you check it out. Thank you if you're listening on any of the podcast channels. We are everywhere and our numbers keep growing and we really appreciate the engagement. We really appreciate the comments and the feedback. And thank you if you're watching any of this content sliced up on my Instagram, which is at Steve Roost, or on our YouTube channel, which is Health Tech Hour. So yeah, thank you very much, everybody. Much appreciated. Thanks for coming along. So last week's show was a new show that we'd done. We broke new ground. We had Liz Hoggard, who was is a Telegraph journalist, one of the leading journalists at the Telegraph, who specializes in gonzo experimentation or self-experimentation around health issues. It was quite a show, and she's quite a character, so I can recommend checking that one out. And today we're actually breaking new ground again, a new direction for the show again. We've got the CEO and founder of Koru Kids on the show, which is one of the largest childcare service providers in the UK, multi-award winning, and the CEO's name is Rachel Carroll. Also, this is really cool because Rachel was someone that I personally reached out to for her advice about PocDoc's very first venture capital round a few years ago, and she gave me very good advice, which has contributed in no small part to PocDoc's growth and success. So it's great to have her on the show. Rachel, how are you?
That's so cool. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Amazing. And I'm great.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm great that you said that.
Yeah, no, totally. Your advice was very instrumental in us choosing to take the term sheet for one of our institutional ones, which has worked out really, really well. So
good.
Thank you.
I'm so glad it worked out.
Yeah, can you imagine? It'd be awkward if it didn't. So there's loads of stuff I want to go through because your company is amazing and you've done fantastic work in and around this space. Obviously, we are a kind of a health tech show generally. So I'm going to try my first questions around how these sort of topics intertwine, because one of the things that I've realized as a parent, as a dad of three kids under eight, is that, and I'm not just saying this to tee you up, but genuinely having sustainable, organized, appropriate and supportive childcare in place has a huge correlation to my mental health and my ability to sort of deliver both for my family and at work. And so how connected have you guys seen the work that you've done at Koru Kids and this kind of upscaling of access to really high quality childcare and the health or mental health of parents?
Yeah, I think they're so intimately entwined, definitely. One of the things that I think about when I think about what we bring, I sometimes say we bring calm to households. That's our true product, you know, calm and maybe even joy. I was actually reading a study this week they asked a whole bunch of kids, very large study of kids, and they asked them, do you want to be spending more time with your mom, more time with your dad? How do you feel about the amount of time? And something like, you know, 10%, it was very low, said they wanted, this was a study of children 8 to 18.
Okay.
And so I think it's important, these were teenagers, a lot of them.
Okay.
They said they want to spend like 10% more, said they wanted to spend more time with their mum. Not very many, a little bit more, but still only like 15% said that they wanted to spend more time with their dad. But the thing that was really significant was nearly a third of them said they wanted their parents to be less stressed. That was
Oh.
what they actually wanted.
One, I mean, we had this with so our kids are 8, 6, and 4. And I broke my heart the other weekend when my 8-year-old was like, why are you so stressed? Like, it makes us feel more stressed, like in a very, not in a childlike way, almost like an adult type of intervention way. So I can completely relate to that.
Oh, totally. And also just physical sickness as well, that anyone who has had a kid go to nursery understands that sure as night follows day, you send your kid to nursery and then not only that child, but other members of the family start going down like flies as well. So I always
Yeah.
feel like it's a little known benefit of having a nanny. It's one of those things you do not think about when you're thinking about childcare, is the amount you're going to have off sick and the amount your kids are going to have off sick.
Yeah, the first week back after some of those holidays is always brutal. Or the first couple of weeks, right? Because everyone's gone away to their own places or wherever, there's been this diaspora away from the anchor institution of the nursery, and then everyone comes back and everyone kind of gets sick.
Yeah.
So what was the inspiration behind starting the company in the first place? Like, what was the core problem statement, if you want to express it like that?
Well, I had a whole different career. Actually, it was in healthcare before I did this. And so I worked at McKinsey, I worked in various different health systems, I worked in the NHS, I ran strategy for London. I then became the CEO of a health tech company. And it was in that role that I had my first baby. And so my whole experience was actually healthcare. And I had this experience of so much innovation and vibrancy in healthcare. Everyone's trying to improve healthcare. There are so many startups, wonderful investors, I used to go to healthcare innovation conferences. And then I had my baby while I was doing that job. And all of a sudden, I became aware of how atrocious childcare was. And it was so exhausting to find. Quality was out there, but it was so hard to find. It was unbelievably expensive. And I experienced it myself, but I also heard it from my friends just time and time again. It was very obvious that the system was deeply, deeply, deeply broken. And because I came from healthcare, my first instinct was, well, okay, who's solving this then? I'll just find there must be lots of startups working on this problem. There must be lots of investors
Because
speculating
there's look,
in it. There
because
must
there's
be
no,
lots of childcare innovation conferences. I'll go to those. I really want to work on this problem. And so I sought out those things, and those things don't exist. Like, none of them. There's virtually no startups, there's no specialist investors, and there's no innovation conferences in childcare. And I was really, really shocked at this. And then I became quite annoyed, actually, because it felt to me like this is a really, really important social function, And I think of it as infrastructure. I like to talk about it as infrastructure. I think it should be respected as infrastructure. Like we think about, I think we should think about it like we think about water pipes or roads, fundamental infrastructure. And it is. Imagine if like a third of our roads would just like disappeared overnight. There's so many holes in our childcare system. And it really annoyed me that it was so under the radar. And so all those things came together and I thought, well, I'm just going to have to do something myself.
And was the health tech business that you ran, was that Echo, or did I get that wrong?
So yeah, if to get really specific, so Echo, the founder of Echo worked for me when I worked in the health tech company. So the one that I ran was called Dr. Tom, and it then got bought by Lloyd's Pharmacy, rebranded Lloyd's Pharmacy Online Doctor, and then Stephen, who was wonderful, he ran it for Ireland, and then he set up Echo.
Yeah, so Stephen Bourke, I know him. He's one of the guys that's helped us actually, because we share
Amazing.
some portfolio stuff on the PocDoc side of things. He's a great guy.
Yes.
Sorry, so then, but when you said there was like nothing existed, what was there? How did one, or does one, without using Coro Kids, like what are the other options? I mean, like, how
So
bad is it?
there's sort of our core product is an after-school nanny. So we do all sorts of different part-time and flexible childcare and part-time and flexible nannies. But the thing that we're most known for in our first core product was after school nanny. And so what that does is a nanny picks up your kids from school and then takes them home to your house, and they can help them do their homework and can cook them a meal and make sure that, if they're very young, they're in their jammies or whatever when you come home, or they're ready for you basically. And this is where the calm and the joy comes in.
Yes.
And so that was the core thing. And so if you really want an after-school nanny, you could kind of ask for them, ask around on Facebook, or like ask around in a WhatsApp group or something. The reality is you'd be actually unlikely to find one. And one of the most important things that we have done, we're not just a matching service. We don't just go out there and find people who do this job and then match them. The problem is that there aren't enough people, like not nearly enough people to do this job. And so what we actually do is we go out and we find people who would make amazing nannies, but who aren't nannies. They don't call themselves nannies.
Okay.
And then we train them up ourselves. And we've done that. I think we've now trained 45,000
Wow.
people. And we only
Wow.
accept 10% of applicants, less than 10%,
Wow.
actually. So it gives
And
you an idea of the scale. Last year alone, we got over 120,000 applications to become a Core
wow.
Kids nanny.
Wow. And so,
Yeah.
what were these people? Were there always that many people that were interested and they just didn't have anywhere to go? Or have you sort of created almost like
Yeah.
an industry sort of thing
I mean,
here?
they didn't know that this was a thing that you could do. So if the people who we take on, some of them, if they weren't doing this job, they wouldn't do any job at all. So
Okay.
if so there's this that we have different segments, but one of them is the sort of older woman aged 45 to 65. And typically this woman has lived in her community for a long time, deeply understands the neighborhood. Typically, she's got kids of her own that are grown up. They're now in their 20s. Sometimes they still live together, but sometimes they don't. And she actually doesn't want a full-time job. She still has often community responsibilities, like other things, lots of things going on in life. She's got her Zumba classes. She's got like
Yeah.
she's doing. She's in loads of groups. She's very social, but she really loves the idea of giving back. She knows what it was like to be a mum. She loves kids. And she actually, she likes the extra money. She needs some extra spending money. She definitely would like that. But she hates the idea. She would never take a job in a shop. She hates the idea of, working in like a pub. That's just not her. So what with this particular segment, if they don't find our job, they just don't work at all. And then there's a different segment, which is this is a now a completely different kind of person. But now imagine a 19, 20-year-old history student at UCL, might be a boy, might love playing football. It never occurs to him in a million years that he would work as a nanny. But actually, he's coached his younger brother's football team. He did some work at a school camp, whatever. He's like, he actually has childcare experience. He's done a bit of babysitting for neighbors and stuff. And he's like a smart, very sensible, like great guy. He would make such an incredible nanny for the right family, kids who love playing football and have like far too much energy and need to burn it off after school. He's perfect. And we have lots of families who love our male nannies, but these are very different people. And so our job, and I can tell you, I mean, I could tell you 10 more little like pen people. Our job is to go out and find these people at great scale and say to them, do you know what? There's this thing. There's this amazing job that you could do, and then obviously we vet them and check them and check that they actually can do it and that they're good, and then we match them up.
And how intensive is nanny school? Is that what do you call it? Nanny training? What's it called? Nanny
We
Academy?
used to call it boot camp to give you an idea of the intensity.
Oh, nice.
Changed a bit. It's back in the day. We've been going 9 years now, and so back in the day, I used to train them all myself personally. And well, actually, we had a. I also had a first aid trainer. I can't teach first aid, but I had some professionals alongside me. But I would do the sort of wraparound stuff, and I spent every single weekend in this abandoned council building in Camden, that was like scheduled to be knocked down for HS2. And I would cook them pizza and pasta, and we would sit outside on the lawn and talk about our lives. And that actually, although totally unscalable, it was really, really, really important in the early days because I got to deeply understand who these people were, why are they doing it, how's this fit into their lives, what do they care about, what's their motivation, and all of that became the really, really important foundational stuff for, okay, you're brilliant, how do I find 1,000 more people like you?
How did you find those core, the first people? Like, where did they come from?
Just job ads. I think the first call came from UCL job board, like
Oh, nice.
uni
Like
job board.
really grassroots.
Yeah, and I didn't even I wouldn't have any money, so I didn't want to pay for the ads. You could do a free ad if it was 25 words or less, so it
Oh,
was sort of like
nice.
a tweet. And I also remember having to like take all the vowels out of my words.
Nice. Okay. Wow. And like, that you said that you focused on, well, the core product that you're most known for is the after school wraparound care. Did you always, did you, how early did you get focused on that? Like, were you looking at, because there's quite a lot of different, if you looked at it a different way, there's sort of almost an infinite amount of
We
possibilities
pivoted.
and
So
variations.
I raised my first round based on a completely different idea. It was still childcare and it was still about fixing childcare infrastructure. That's always been my passion. But it was a different way of doing that, and it was focused on babies. And
Okay.
we tried to do that for about 6 months. And what we the experience we had was, our website was all pictures of babies, and everything we talked about was babies and maybe a little bit toddlers. But we kept getting these applications. All our sign-ups were for people wanting help with children after school. And we would get excited because we'd get a sign-up, and you'd kind of get a ding, and it would come into your inbox, and you'd be like, oh, good, another sign-up. And then you'd look at it and you'd go, oh, after school again, which we couldn't do.
Right.
Another one, oh, good, oh, after school again. And it took a while for us to kind of whack ourselves on the head and say, do you know what? When people are signing up for something that you clearly do not sell,
Yeah.
that's a pretty strong
Well,
indication of.
if people are like going to the effort of su like how many places have they tried before they ended up on your website at that point? No offense, because you had just started, right? Like
Yeah,
they must be
exactly.
desperate.
So desperate. And I remember then we had one of these trainings. I think it was maybe even our first one ever. And the first cohort, which was like 10 or 15 nannies, sort of hit the market. And hitting the market basically just meant I made a post in a Facebook group about them. And I did one in somewhere. It's one of the South London family groups, parents groups. And I remember I got 63 parents fighting over this one
Oh, wow.
actually incredible nanny. And again, that was just more validation of like, wow, this is an unmet demand. And to your question about how did people do it before, this gives you their answer. This gives you the answer. You could not get them.
And so, wow. Okay. How do you even go about trying to balance that supply and demand? I guess you went out and found a huge number more nannies, right?
That's it. Well, it was initially very obvious. I mean, running a marketplace, you obsess over marketplace balance constantly. It's a real art, and it's not just one balance. It's 1,000 different balances of 1,000 different factors, and you can do really, really well in. We can attract tons of nannies in a particular area, and if we accidentally screw up our family strategy in the same area, then it doesn't matter that we won nannies. And the opposite is also true. So balance is incredibly important, and you have to make sure everything's moving at once. Otherwise, you waste a lot of effort and time and money. And so we obsess over it. And so for the first 2 years, it was actually pretty simple. We just as many nannies as we could bring to the
Yeah,
market.
you just you're I mean you're just open the doors, here we go,
It
kind
was
of.
that were flying off the shelves.
Wow. And what's your take on the reasons why this market was the way it was before you came in and did it the way that you were doing it? Like, no investors, no conferences, completely disparate, completely analog almost, calling friends of friends and asking for favors and stuff. Like, how did it evolve to that point? Or is that the way in every country? I've got not really a great
It actually,
understanding.
so no, for a lot of Western Europe, childcare is actually really, really good. People still some in those countries sometimes complain about it, but it's crazy. They're complaining about paying like $300 a month kind of
Okay.
thing, and they still think it's expensive. Like it's off the charts better.
Okay.
So this is a problem that is almost unique to I think to Anglosphere countries actually. So US has huge problems, the UK has huge problems, Australia and New Zealand not very good either,
Okay.
for whatever reason. And I think it's, I actually, I think it's the confluence of, when I say for whatever reason, I do have many thoughts about the reasons. I think it's the confluence of two things. One is you can either solve the childcare problem through sort of society and community. And a lot of countries do that. So what that looks like is older people who are maybe retired, but in your family, like the grandmas kind of look
Yeah.
after, the grandmas look after the
The
grandkids,
family unit.
your family unit, right? And like unmarried aunties, and like that's definitely one way of like attacking the problem. And you have intergenerational housing, and I actually think that's an incredible way of solving the problem. I think it's wonderful, but it's not what we do in the UK. And then there's a different way that you can do it, which is massive tax base and like huge welfare subsidies to childcare. And that's what a lot of Western Europe does. So that's what Sweden and, you know, a lot of Western European countries do. The problem we have in the UK is we do neither of those things.
Right.
And so we are pretty rare actually in putting virtually 100% of the burden on individuals. So why is it? I mean, I think it's a philosophy of individualism, and it's to do with the way that we see communal living and the family and our tolerance for tax.
I think that's a very good summary. And my producer is now saying that we need to stop for our first commercial break. So we will do that, and then we'll come back with Rachel Carroll, CEO of Koru Kids, because I know that you write extensively on LinkedIn about issues in and around the industry. And I'd love to, and I know that you also campaign heavily in Parliament and around the political sphere around some of these things. And so picking up on that thread, I'd love to understand, and I do mean understand because I don't really understand the connection as to what you've just said into the big announcements around free childcare, 30 free hours, all of these things, because something isn't quite adding up, right? And so I'd love to dig into that a little bit. But we'll be right back after 2 minutes.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest this week, Rachel Carroll, who is the CEO of Koru Kids, which is one of the leading childcare service providers in the UK. So let's pick up on that thread. So you very eloquently explained as to the unique position that the UK finds itself in between having a disrupted family unit structure that means there aren't as much, or there isn't as much extended family to look after children as there might be in other countries. And at the same time, we don't have a high tax base social security provision for childcare. And how does that relate, though, to successive governments and announcements around free childcare that have happened? I think, I mean, at least through the last two or three successive governments, there seems to have been new policies around this area.
Yeah, I think they've tried to make them look a lot bigger than they actually are. So if kind of, you know, the, I don't know if people who are watching can see
You've
my hand.
got her
Basically, I'm
hand
holding
above her
one
head.
hand up very high, and then I'm
Yeah.
holding the other hand up like not very high. So we sort of start from here where, like, you know, the Scandinavian and Western European countries are subsidizing to this enormously high amount, and we are subsidizing hardly at all. And then if we double our investment, and now I am moving my hand up very slightly, there's still an absolute gulf between the two levels of investment, and yet we have doubled investment. So what happens is the government gets to say, we have doubled investment, which sounds enormous, but the baseline is so low, is what I'm saying.
And
And there's
sorry, sorry.
all sorts of just smoke and mirrors about the wording that gets used around these things. So let me explain one to you really
Yeah,
practically.
let's do some myth busting,
So
please.
firstly, when they say 30 hours of free childcare, what they actually mean is 30 hours for 38 weeks a year. 38 for your
Oh.
baby, not
Oh.
52. You may have noticed that 38 is not the number of weeks in the year.
I mean, I'm no calendar expert, but I'm
Exactly.
pretty
That's
confident
not
there's
a
a
year.
14 week.
Why is that? Well, it's for a very crazy reason. It's because schools are in 38 weeks a year. And so the DfE, when the DfE says a year, what they mean is 38 weeks. Now, we're talking about babies who don't go to school. So this, you might think school is entirely irrelevant to the length of a year, but still, that's what it means. And so what happens is people very reasonably, a couple doing their sums, sitting down and going, okay, can we afford, for you to go back to work? Like, how's this going to affect our mortgage? Can we buy this house? Like, making these huge big decisions. Can we have another child? Like, let's do our sums. They go, okay, well, we're going to get 30 hours of free childcare and this. So then that means you can go back to work for 30 hours a week and it'll be free. And you kind of like, make all these like reasonable plans. And then they turn up at the nursery and the nursery says, thanks very much. That'll be 1200 quid or something. And they go, what are you talking about? It's free. And the nursery says, well, no, it's free for 38 weeks. You can't have
Oh, so what? So what?
you.
Okay.
And
Wow.
they say, well,
Okay.
my job isn't 38 weeks. My job is, whatever. So that's one of the examples of the sort of smoke and mirrors. And the other one, this is something that the industry absolutely hates, is that the government is constantly calling these free. And it's just infuriating. I mean, they basically they promise to the customer. If you think about this from the perspective of a private business, imagine if the government said, if you run a restaurant, imagine, and imagine if the government said, we're going to make all beer from now on is going to be free, super popular policy.
I suspect that would
But
be popular, yes.
you as a pub or a restaurant, don't get enough money from the government to subsidize your beer completely. But the government's promised that it's free. This is
Wait,
essentially what's
so they're
happened.
not covering enough
No,
to
they're
cut.
not. I should probably have, I did probably
No,
didn't make a clear
I love this
analogy,
stuff.
made
That's
a
why I
point.
love doing. That's why I really wanted to get you on the show because it's a universal topic. And so, and I would imagine most people listening, including myself, didn't really have the time to dig behind the headlines. So please carry on. That sounds really interesting.
So I mean that is a huge problem. So what happens is money comes from government, and it goes first thing place it goes is to the local authority, and then the local authority does this thing called top slicing, which means that it takes some, and it can take however much it wants. So different local authorities take different amounts, and some take a larger percentage, and some take a smaller, and it's sort of just it's just the luck of which local authority you live in. And I suspect it's correlated to whether they invested in Icelandic banks about 20 years ago, how
Oh
much
wow.
percentage
So do you
that
know
they
what the take rates are, give or take, like the upper lower? Like what have you heard?
it's a small percent, like it might be sort of 5%, but this is an industry where every percentage really matters because large numbers of nurseries are going out of business.
Exactly.
And
I
this is
wanted to come on to
it's a
that.
tough and a low margin business. And so what happens is they then get you then get told, you're getting like £3.17 or something per 3-year-old per hour, something like that. And you then work out your costs. And what generally happens is when you work out your costs for a lot of nurseries, your costs are simply higher than that. At this point, you are not you have a choice. You can either offer the so-called free hours or you can not offer them. If you don't, if you offer them, you're going to lose money. If you don't offer them, you're going to get a lot of annoyed parents who do not have the time to listen to the explanation for why you're not offering them. The thing that you're not allowed to do is ask parents to pay the difference, which would be sensible, right? And again, this is kind of coming back to the pub analogy.
So you can't pass it on in the fees. You can't pass it on
You
to the
can't.
customer.
So what you're not allowed to do, let's imagine you get £3 per hour from the government, and let's imagine it costs you £4 per hour to deliver. You are not allowed to charge £1 per hour, absolutely not. And so what nursery, because it has to be free, because the government has promised it would be free.
But the parents are still paying for 14 weeks on top of the 38, though, or. Can you not
Yes.
bundle it into the 14
You
weeks and
cannot
that?
make it contingent. So you can you also can so nurseries have tried
I
every
bet.
trick in the book, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way because they are in a really, really, really tough situation.
They just want to stay open, I
They
assume.
just
They
want to
just.
stay open. And so that so one of the things they've tried, for example, is they've said, well, okay, well we'll charge for nappies, we'll charge for extra this and extra that. And again, this depends on the local authority. In some local authorities, some of them have been able to do that, but I've seen you know, on in groups on Facebook and stuff, people share these letters that they've got from their local authorities saying that they're not allowed to do that. So even the kind of creative ways of getting around this policy are often they get stymied. So nurseries are in a really, really tough place.
But that sounds like an extinction level type event. I mean, I don't understand how those economics ever work out to a point where anyone can ever run a business.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah,
It
that
is
sounds
actually tough.
horrendous.
No, part of the part, I mean, part of the other, there's layers to this problem. The part of the problem is that there's one, about half of the market is in very tough to serve lower income areas of the country.
Right.
Those are the nurseries that cannot put up their prices on their on the hours that aren't free, and find it very hard to cross subsidize, and it's just generally a very hard business.
Right.
There's other nurseries, though, and these tend to be in the richer areas, that are actually making a huge amount of money. And there are chains of nurseries that some of the bigger chains, some of the biggest chains are actually incredibly lucrative businesses, private
Really?
equity owned,
Really?
like
Come on.
making loads.
Private equity-owned nurseries.
Yes, the biggest chains are,
Wow.
the biggest chain in the country is private equity owned and doing very well.
Wow.
And so this then causes a major political problem, because
Yeah.
the government very understandably doesn't want to put tons of money into this sector and have it go straight out to private equity.
Yeah.
But because that chain exists and is highly profitable, it kind of politically prevents them from giving money to the other ones who are like going out of business en masse.
And actually, those are the ones that they want to support and that they need to
Exactly.
support. Oh my, what a
Exactly.
pickle.
And they're in
What a
the poorer
pickle.
areas. So,
Yeah.
which is why the big private equity chains would never locate a nursery in those areas, because it's not lucrative. So, in my view, I think the most important thing that should be done for nursery policy is to make a distinction. I think what needs to be done is they need to recognize that the market is formed of these different segments and treat them differently. And one way would be to say we're going to subsidize nurseries in lower income areas more.
Okay, that would make sense. And you know, when you go and talk to people in government and politicians and things like that, like how much do you think that they sort of empathize, get it, understand it, are interested in doing something, or is it sort of just how engaged are they on this particular issue, do you think?
That it's changed hugely. So I've been doing this for 9 years,
Yeah.
and 9 years ago, I could not get arrested for talking about childcare. Like, I don't even think that if that makes sense as a sentence, but I could not get anyone to listen to me. Like,
Okay.
and it was so exciting the first time childcare hit the front pages of you know, like the Times or the Guardian or something.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even anything about like what I work on, but it was something that I had been advocating about childcare. And we've come such a long way from that. Like, now it is a hugely hot topic, and Bridget Phillotson has said that early years education is literally her top priority, which, you know,
Okay.
she's the Minister of Education. That is would have been impossible to imagine that 9 years ago. So
Wow.
that makes me very hopeful that it has truly risen up the agenda. I think that's like the first step, though, right?
Okay.
So it needs to go
Yeah.
up the agenda, tick done. And then people need to like really understand the issues, which I think is in process now. And then we need to actually do something about it, which I think is definitely the hard bit.
And how much in your industry are you guys, the leaders in the industry, working together to affect change versus it's sort of every person for themselves a bit and lobbying individually sort of thing? I'm just different industries are different.
I think childcare happens to be a very collaborative industry, and maybe it's the nature of it. We think about kindness and empathy and resilience, and that's what we do. We're trying to teach small children all these things. So I think that probably seeps through in the way that we behave. It generally is a well-behaved and very collaborative bunch. And so I do quite a lot with other people, actually.
Oh, that's nice. Because
Yeah.
in sometimes it's sometimes you don't know. And are you when you started, were you guys viewed as sort of, ooh, disruptors, or what was the reception in the industry? 'Cause, well, maybe there wasn't even really an organized industry. I'm not.
No,
I don't.
I don't think anyone noticed,
Right.
because we weren't we were disrupting nothing, as in it was so hard there wasn't it was so hard to get flexible childcare that we weren't really harming anyone. And I think we've always sort of tried to work in collaboration. I mean, at times that we then went into the younger kids, and I guess that is slightly more competitive with other forms of childcare, but by then we had a name and a good reputation.
Right, that makes sense. Referring back to one of the earlier comments you made around there weren't specialist investors and things like that. What was the reaction of investors when you first sort of went out and started talking to them about this? And like, how did you position it? And how different was that positioning versus where you are now? Just kind of curious on what you kind
Yeah,
of, what was
I
the
remember
initial sort of outreach like?
my very first round. I had to educate everyone about how big the industry was,
Yeah.
and that was in that's interesting because a lot of the people who I was speaking to actually had children, and not all, but let's say maybe half or something of the people I was speaking to had children, and therefore actually had used childcare. So they were consumers in this industry. But I can kind of understand, because one of the things about childcare is super, super, super fragmented as an industry.
Yeah, completely. Especially, yeah,
The
go on,
biggest
sorry.
player, this biggest player owns about 5% of the market, has about a 5% market share, which is
Wow.
now that is a very fragmented industry. And
Yeah.
so what that means is, as a consumer, your experience of it and your friend's experience of it is of dealing with a very small provider. Might be a single provider. You know, it might be like a nursery that isn't part of a chain, you know.
Yeah.
And even if you did send your kid to the chain, there are a couple of big chains. Even if you did go there, they're actually still not like household name brands. So one of the really important things I did in my very first round was I had this chart, and it sort of showed all these other industries. Like, I remember I had like legal services and footwear and taxis and like food and all this stuff. And then it had all these logos next to them of all the people who disrupted it. So like taxis was Uber, footwear
Yeah.
was like Zappos, you know. And then it showed childcare, and childcare was about halfway up. And it had the logo space for like who's the big brand owner who's disrupted childcare. And of course it was empty because it isn't one.
Yeah.
And so this chart was very important,
Yeah.
and I think it kind of immediately people's reaction to it, most immediate reaction was, is that right?
What
Like,
the
is
childcare's
childcare
hub.
actually that big? Like
Yeah.
that. So there was definitely skepticism, but then what would happen is they would go away. I would say, no, it really is, and then they would go away after our meeting, and then I would get these emails afterwards going, oh, I just looked it up, it's really big. And
Ah, so was there
I'm like, yeah, no.
was there actual data available, or did you have to
Yeah.
stitch it together?
No,
Like,
like it's
it's
available. Like,
available.
someone else could have done this, you know, an
Right.
associate, VCs come up with these proactive strategies. Someone could have come up with a proactive strategy. They just didn't. It's just a weirdly under the radar, absolutely enormous industry.
It's bonkers, isn't it? It's like everyone uses it. Well, not everyone, sorry. A large number of, a high percentage of the population interacts with childcare in some way, shape, or form, including, as you said, investors and, all business leaders and things like that. No one ever sort of joined the dots.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing that people said to me for the first probably 2 years at least was, as soon as you do this, you're going to get loads of competitors. They said, as soon as you raise a round, as soon as you're in like
Yeah.
TechCrunch or whatever, you know, look, you're going to get six fast followers, and they're all going to copy you. And that also never happened.
Yeah, so that was another thing I was going to come on to because I think that that's really interesting because, in one sense, we have to go for a break in a minute, but if I don't say this, then I'll forget it. But the in one sense, there's like there isn't from the outside looking in, you haven't developed necessarily some sort of patentable something IP that anyone else couldn't necessarily copy, but no one's done it, which. So I want to get into that after this break because that is unusual, particularly in something that you could argue is a, it's not quite a traditional direct-to-consumer business, but well, maybe you think it is, I'm not sure, but it's not quite the same as selling a product, but you're targeting individuals to sign up and pay you for something or service. And there's not been anyone else come along, which I think is amazing and fascinating.
Do we
Oh
announce it
yeah.
now,
Yeah.
or
So
should we go to the
yeah. So you're running my show now. Okay, cool. So we will go for our final commercial break. We'll be back in 2 minutes with my guest this week, Rachel Carroll, for CEO of Coru Kids. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio. the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's show, this week's Health Tech Hour with my guest, Rachel Carroll, CEO of CoruKit. Let's talk about the thing that we were just talking about, Rachel, which was why do you think that there haven't been any followers to your company? Maybe there have been, and I couldn't find any in my research, and you mentioned that there hadn't been any, but what's your take on that whole thing?
So there have been a couple that have slightly tried, but they've sort of fallen by the wayside. And I think, honestly, the answer is that it is very hard. Like, it's very operationally hard. And one of the things, I haven't really talked that much about what our product actually is, but what we've built is end-to-end. So we provide you with a nanny. So we recruit the nanny, and then we train them, we vet them, and then we match them. And then at the other end, we manage it as well. So we help you set up your pension for, so if
okay, yeah, because they need all the payroll type stuff.
It's exactly, you need to pay tax, you need to deal with HMRC, you need to deal with pension regulator. We do all of that. We also provide ongoing support to the nanny. We deal with, you know, all sorts of things that come up along the way. So if you have to navigate sick pay, if your nanny gets pregnant, there's sort of all mm-hmm. sorts of things that that come up that we help you with along the way, and. So in order to build all of that, you kind of have to build several different businesses at once. Like a recruitment business, that's a whole business.
Yep.
A training business is a whole business. A yep. marketplace, just the marketplace is, you know, and then the bit afterwards is sort of like a B2B SaaS company. You know, you have to, I wouldn't say we've built payments, but we at least like interface with yep. payment. And, so building all of that has just been really hard, and also to keep your costs manageable, you have to achieve like a really good amount of scale. I mean, we pick up now 3,000 children a day. Today after school, we'll pick up about 3,000 kids.
Wow.
And you kind of have to do it at that scale in order actually to cover your costs when you're doing all of that stuff. So I just think it is operationally very, very complex. I mean, I'm envious of people who founded businesses in like the late 1990s and early 2000s when there were just these really easy businesses to be built. but those ones have all been taken. So, you know,
yeah.
We do.
Well, especially in something like this where the customer, the parent, obviously cares a huge amount that this goes well. I mean, this isn't a casual purchase. This isn't a, you know, 20
exactly.
quid a month. This is a hugely important exactly. decision, and it's very individual. There's all kinds of different idiosyncrasies going on. It's very high touch. There's, like, as you say, regulatory compliance, payroll compliance. Yeah. It's really in depth.
It really is, and it's subtle and nuanced, and we have to have experts on all sorts of things in our team. And, you know, if anyone wants to do it, I like, bring it on, and, you know, I'll see you in 3 years.
Well, I know from when we so I was one of the early founders, early employees rather, at Viagogo, which was a marketplace business, live event ticket marketplace. So we grew that to like 100 different countries, and actually that business, no one really understood how that business was successful, because it at its core was an operationally highly efficient business,
right.
Like connecting a buyer of a ticket to a seller of a ticket from, the seller might be in Poland, but the buyer might be in England, and they might be traveling to Australia to see the show. And being able to connect all of those different dots, actually, we realized pretty early on that, you know, not quite the same thing, but the content, i.e. the events and things like that, sort of took care of the demand element of it. People wanted to go to events. Events were sold out. We were the only place for tickets. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. Actually, the magic, and this is why we never really had any competitors either, after a couple of people fast followed and failed, was the operational aspects mm-hmm. of it was so intense. And actually, you know, people really, really cared. So if something was going on with their tickets, that was a major issue for them. And actually, that was what got us to this global scale, was just a ruthless focus on operational efficiency and like matching the marketplace.
It's very similar. Yeah. And then once you've done it, it's an enormous moat.
Oh my
Because it
God.
just
Yeah.
takes so long to figure all this
Well,
stuff out. These
yeah.
it's never one thing. It's a thousand things.
Yeah, the aggregate. And like with you guys, how hard is it going to be for someone else to come and build what the nanny academy to onboard 45,000 nannies? I mean, that's in order to compete in that market, that's sort of what you might have to do. And that's someone looking at that's gonna be like, wow, that's a real stretch. You know? That's a real stretch. So talking of, because you've obviously been on, did Dr. Tom, right? That was it? Dr.
That's right,
Tom?
yeah.
Dr. Tom. And now this. And so what are the kind of what are the lessons that you've learned along the way on your entrepreneurial journey? Like the things that you kind of use and go back to keep you going, because I mean, healthcare's hard, childcare's hard. It's,
I
yeah.
mean, so many, but I think this is a sad one. Everything is always worse, takes longer, costs more, and is shitter than you think it's going to be. It's quite a
Right.
big one.
Yeah.
So, I don't think you found anything unless you're an optimist. I'm 9 years in, and like it's taken so much longer to get to where I, where I thought we'd be like 3 years in.
Right.
And I'm really glad we've done it, and I'm really, like, I'm really, 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 really proud of it. But it's one of these things that, like, if you knew ahead of time how hard it was going to be,
You would never
you
do
have
it.
done it,
No,
and
yeah.
I think that's pretty common from talking to many, many founders about that. Like no one gets into something and discovers it's easier than they thought it would be.
I mean, PocDoc is a regulated medical device, so I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you on
There
that
is a
one.
bit of that night. Like I think you need that sort of like stupid naivety to actually try something, and then like you're in it, and you're like, then you need your bloody mindedness, and your
Yeah.
refusal to like back down to keep going.
I kind of talk about it a bit like your mission has to be really strong. Like whatever you feel for has to be so strong that you can get through those really rough moments where you're sort of like, oh my goodness, what on earth is going on? Why did I,
Definitely.
you've got to have something bigger than just like, oh, I'm looking to, make some cash or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, exactly. It definitely has to be begin there. I mean, I think the thing that has always been true is the people in the Cory Kids team have always been unbelievably exceptional. I mean, I pinch myself every day that I get to work with the people that I get to work with, and that has been true consistently over the last 9 years. And the Cory Kids alum just go on to such cool things.
Right.
So I, that has been the greatest joy. The best thing about being a founder is that you get to create the culture, and you get to choose who you build this thing with. And the worst thing is that everything is always your fault at the end of the day, because either you did it or you hired the person who did it. So
Yeah.
everything is your fault. But the best thing is that you get to say, do you know what? We're going to have a culture that's like this, and whatever it is that you want to do, that's what it is.
I couldn't agree more with those statements. Yeah, it's definitely not for the faint-hearted, but it does give you this unbelievable freedom to explore yourself and your career and your sort of boundaries and go way beyond your boundaries and work with amazing people and just sort of come in and do things for the first time that haven't ever been done before. It's an amazing kind of experience if you're that way inclined.
Yeah,
Um,
definitely.
so the I was going to pick up on something that we talked about before. What do you th what in terms of other countries or more like what's in the future or what's next? Because obviously you could do more different things in the UK, you could go to a different country like or not. I mean, obviously the UK market I'm sure is worth a gajillion pounds because it's childcare, but how do you see the next, 2 to 3 years playing out for you guys?
So we are at, it's a great time to think about that question, because we are at a bit of a strategic crossroads where I feel like there's many things that we could go on and do. And so one of the things that we have certain things we're really good at. We are incredible at finding childcare workers at scale and training them. We make wonderful digital experiences, and we've got a really strong brand, and we've very, very, very good reputation among the people among our segment. So I'm kind of thinking now, like, how do we use those things, and are there new challenges that we can kind of go on to conquer within childcare? And so I do think about that being in the UK, but I also think, well, should we just take what we're doing right now and just take it to other countries? It's cool to hear that you've taken something to 100 countries before. That is a lot.
Yeah.
And
It was
when I think
crazy.
about that, I think about America. I think one of the attractions of America right now, commercially speaking, is the US dollar is just so strong compared to the
Yeah.
pound. So if you can be a UK-based team selling into the US, it's a pretty good time to be doing that. And I think that cities like Chicago, New York, Boston are very much like where London was when we started. So
Okay.
I love the idea of going in there. If
You
anyone
think
is
that,
listening
so,
to this
yeah,
and
sorry.
finds that an interesting statement, if you're from New York or whatever and you have any form of view, please get in touch. I'd love to
So after this
chat about
show,
this.
I'll chat with you in a second because after this show, my previous boss, that was the number two person that scaled us to 100 countries, is actually coming in.
Oh, amazing.
He's an American guy. So, and he's looking to help other businesses go to the US.
Amazing.
So,
That's cool.
I'll connect you. But so do you think that the thesis holds true in the US? Do you think it's the same thesis or similar, give or take, to the UK? Like, there's enough similar.
Yeah, like at the highest level, yes. And then the devil will be in the detail of cultural translation, I think. And there are certain things that are different about the US, so it's far more litigious than the UK.
Yeah.
Health insurance is completely different, so you
Right.
need to think about that.
Yeah.
So there's aspects of the product, and then the segments. We've spent a lot of time getting our segmentation right for the nannies. And then if you go to America, you're dealing with a completely different population. The role
Yeah.
of undocumented workers is completely different.
Oh,
And then I've
interesting.
been paying very close attention to what
Interesting.
Trump's doing because that's going to change it again.
Because how much childcare is done kind of unofficially by undocumented workers?
A lot more. A
Yeah.
lot more. I mean, it's reasonably rare in the UK, and I think it's not rare in the US.
Yeah, how would you navigate that? That's a tricky one. Maybe not for a live on air discussion, but
Well, our position's very clear. We will only ever do stuff that is on the books, on the table, on the
Right.
table, over the table, whatever, above
Open
board,
books.
all those
Yeah.
things.
Above the
And
board.
so we just do not play in the illegal market, whether that's to do with tax or to do with anything else. We are really, really, really hot on being scrupulous and compliant. And so what that means is we wouldn't play in that market, but it just means it's effectively a smaller market because we would only ever play in the legitimate bit of it.
Yeah, but like in a way, I'm not that the market in the UK was illegitimate before you showed up, but actually you've had such an effect on the dynamics of the market. Like it's not impossible to imagine that well, whether or not individuals would this would be an issue for individuals, but you could see yourselves going in, and a bit like the way that Uber kind of professionalized the minicab trade, right? You know, when you used to walk out of a pub or a club and there was tons of those unlicensed minicabs, they've basically disappeared. They've gone. So,
Good point, actually. Yeah, that's true.
like I don't, I mean, obviously the US is a huge market and things like that, and I have no idea about the scale of undocumented workers and actually whether it's one of those things where everyone quite likes them because you can maybe it's price sensitive market and you get it half price, but I don't know. So yeah, but I wouldn't underestimate your ability to influence the market.
Yeah, well, if anyone has views, let me know.
I will do. So I've got two final questions. One is, how did you come up with the name?
So it's a New Zealand thing. I'm from New Zealand, and it's a Māori word. And it means, again, if you can see the video, it's a
Yeah.
shape, which I'm making with my hand right now.
Okay.
And
Like a hook.
described like a spiral kind of shape. But it's
Okay.
not a spiral, it's a koru. It's a very specific shape. And it's the shape of an unfurling fern frond. That's what it means, the
Oh,
unfurling
wow.
fern frond.
Okay.
So it has multiple resonances. It's children are like these unfurling ferns that grow. My daughter's middle name is Fern, and it's a very important symbol in New Zealand. And it also means loop. And I like to think of what we are as like a loop of care around the parents and the children and the nanny.
Beautiful. And then finally, just before we go, if anyone is concerned about childcare and would like to look at your services, where should they go?
They should go to our website. They can Google Koru Kids, Koru Kids.
Perfect. On that note, Rachel, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to have you on.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
No worries. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again with a live show next week. Thank you.